Wednesday, July 19th at 6 o'clock to order. We have Alderman Koch, Alderman Milchewski, Alderman Kopp, myself, and staff. And I take it no citizens' comments, since there's no one here. Minutes for correction or approval. Any comments on those? We'll take them as presented. Moving on, new business, DW 2016-44, Parkway Maintenance.
Just a quick update for you, since we kind of went to the kind of the floating schedule. I wanted to just let you know that we've done multiple once, and we're working on finishing up those for the first time and then going back and hitting the main roads again. It really has helped. It's really helped us in the way we schedule our mowing, because we can hit different things while we're in the area. It's really freed up time for people. We've had a couple complaints, but you know, when we tell them that we're only mowing it a couple times a year, everybody's pretty understanding.
Sounds good. Any questions, comments on that one? Good informational item. Public Works 2016-45, Capital Improvement Projects Update.
Yes, we prepared our quarterly update in regards to the capital improvements. If you'd like, we can quickly run through each of them. That would be the preference of the committee.
Highlights.
Will do. We'll touch base on Countryside. To date, probably about 45% of the water main's been installed. Next week, there's a good chance we'll see some milling along West Kendall, and actually pavement toward the end of the week going down Binder Course. That's the tentative schedule. So far the project's moving along very well. And then just to briefly comment on some of the other projects, the Road to Better Roads, the Mill Street LAFO, Church Street Water Main, all those projects are essentially substantially complete, the main work items taken care of. The street lighting project, the ITEP project, that's been a hot topic in the past. We've reached out to the contractor again here recently. As far as we know, the poles are expected to be complete around mid-August, so we should see some activity come mid-August. So those are some of the construction highlights, and then maybe just a touch base on the design project, mainly Kennedy Road. Just late this afternoon, we actually got some documents from ComEd. On the land acquisition or the lease agreement. So we'll be sending that to our land acquisition specialist. We need to make sure it follows the IDOT policies and procedures. We'll probably also send it to Kathy and have her go through it. So we'll have to kind of go through the documents, but finally, some progress and at least a response from ComEd. So our goal is to still try to hit the September letting. We don't have a lot of time to accomplish this, but regardless, construction would not occur in 2016 anyway. That's a brief update. If there's anything else, we can address it.
Any questions, comments?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Moving on. 2016-46, bond LOC reduction summary.
Just in the packet for informational purposes. Again, this is the quarterly update. Not a lot of activity from a reduction standpoint, but one item in regards to Stagecoach Crossing over the last quarter.
Questions, comments? Thank you. Continuing on. Public Works 2016-47, Church Street Water Main Improvements, change order number one.
All right, this project is substantially complete. So this is the only change order that we anticipate, so it's kind of our final balancing change order. The work has been complete here for a couple weeks. So the change order is in the amount of $3,586.45. That's an increase in the cost of the contract. It can be summarized, in a couple different ways, but there were several modifications just due to how the original plans were set up and then the actual utilities that were discovered. Once construction took place, there were some differing fuel conditions at River Street and Main Street. There were some water services that were discovered to be connected differently, a number of things like that. There was also a water main that broke during construction, and I'm sure Eric can speak more to it, but basically the decision was made to have the contractor fix it instead of the city. So that was also part of this project. And then there was also some storm sewer additions made on Church Street just to eliminate some drainage issues. So all in all, that was all incorporated in, and then that change was over almost $4,000.
Eric, can you elaborate on the water main break? Just a random break?
Yes.
Unrelated to the project?
Unrelated to the project. Yeah, it was just they were right there with all their equipment and all their machinery. We were already out doing other work, and that is probably about the exact about the cost that we could have done it for. Honestly, that's
it's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I wish I could get them all fixed for that much, to be honest.
All right. Any questions or comments on this one? Consent. All right. And that is our what's our meeting coming up? The 26th.
Yes.
Okay. 2016-48 Route 34 improvements, Old Main Center. This is a transfer of property to IDOT.
Yes, we received a packet from IDOT seeking the property. It's a small sliver of property near Blackberry Creek. They want to purchase the land. It's slightly less than half an acre. All the documents are attached in the packet. City attorney has reviewed the documents as well as prepared a draft resolution, so everything is acceptable from that point of view. So basically, the question is whether or not the city wants to approve the resolution authorizing the transfer of the property.
Why is the value of this property so low?
It's basically useless property, if you will. It's floodplain. It's right adjacent to Blackberry Creek. It's non-developable.
It's on a hill like this, yeah. And then a bottom that's in floodplain, so yeah. You really couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, I take issue with the price that they're offering. Basically, it equates to $4,400 an acre,
yeah.
Which their comparisons that they use, the comps, are $30,000 to $50,000 comps, which really aren't comps. And if you read his memo, the appraiser's memo, it states that he's lowballing it because it's a undevelopable, unusable piece of property, which generally it is. Granted, it's open space for the city. My argument would be that it's still a public open space that should be valued that, regardless of if it's floodplain. We have a piece of floodplain that has a very high value that we use for matching grants. I don't particularly care for the lowball number. Fighting it, I don't think, is worthwhile on this one.
I was going to say, can we contest it and come back with another figure?
We can draft that.
Well, I mean, is it really going to get us anywhere, I guess, what I'm thinking?
Would it delay it?
It's likely that they're doing the same thing with every other property owner down the project. So, you know, it wouldn't delay unless we hold out much past their own deadlines, but... Yeah. Typically, we've always just accepted their assessment and appraisal because we do the same thing basically with our projects, and we have to use the same criteria. And so, you know, I don't know
the criteria, but this one is he admits that it's a subjective lie at the end of it due to being an unbuildable project.
Sure, sure.
It didn't follow this line of his comparables.
Sure, but the same criteria has been used by us in the past, like with Game Farm. All the other projects, Kennedy Road, we had to acquire two other parcels. Just, you know, you kind of use the IDOT standards and process and then go from there.
Which, I've agreed typically with their prices. This one I really don't. And I understand that they're out to do the best they can and buy for the cheapest they possibly can. So, any thoughts on this one from everybody else?
You know, I just think about the putting in staff time and that, trying to research this further. If it was anybody else but another government entity, I would say let's look into it, but I don't know. I don't know how far we're gonna get with this, and is it really worth the time and effort?
I'm with you there. I think that if this was something that actually was a more usable piece, granted, if it was a floodplain that actually had access, it'd be something. This is a floodplain that we can't even access. So, Becky, can
These used to be the $10 grants to the state. Yeah. I mean, honestly.
So with that, any objection to consent?
Nope.
We'll move that on. Continuing. Public Works 2016-49, Kennedy Road Shared Youth Pass, Phase 3 Engineering, RFQ results.
Okay, memo in the packet on both the RFQ process, the different bids, the criteria that we used basically to select and rank the firms. And then the process is usually, you know, we select who we think is the best without knowing price. And then we go to the firm and we ask them for a price. And so that was EEI in this case. And obviously since they gave us the original design estimates for the price, they came in at budget, rather. So that was acceptable, at least from our perspective. So the contract is in the packet. It is for $164,000 for construction engineering for the project, which would stretch between fiscal year 17 and 18, as long as everything goes correctly. So that was our recommendation to approve it. There were a couple emails back and forth today on it. I don't know if everybody saw it. Just on the aggregated rankings between the different employees for the four criteria for each vendor. And then, you know, there was a little bit of a narrative just on some of the high points of the proposals. So, you know, in general, when choosing EEI over anybody else, you know, you've got the past history with them. And so that was something that it's not necessarily a knock against anybody else's proposal as much as it is, you know, the last few projects that we've had, we have clear evidence of success with. So, you know, it's easier for them to put something on paper that is a little bit easier to rank highly than others. So HR Green was right there. Actually, I think they were 2 points off quantitatively, too. But we would have been fine with them, too. And we actually went through the effort to rank them all the way down to the ninth one and then made a cutoff based on the scores to people who would be comfortable working with in the future. So that's everybody through T.Y. Lynn, who is part of our comp plan proposal. So we would actually, in the future, if either EEI couldn't do something because of, you know, they don't have many conflicts, but from a conflict perspective or an expertise perspective, which we've actually used Benish in the past too, for structural engineering type things, so we would be able to just directly contract with those people rather than going through this process again. So this is the first time that we've went through it that I can recall. It's probably been, you know, a few years before I was administrator that we actually went through the formal RFQ process. But it is something that technically, you know, every time we can go through unless we have a prior relationship with someone and we do a sole source type of engineering contract. So if anybody has any questions about process or the contract, happy to take them.
I have one question. With the 2 point spread from EEI and HR Green, did we discuss this or approach HR Green or no?
No.
Okay, because this was, it really was, and that's why I wanted to see the breakdown of the four categories of judging, or not judging, but evaluation, is to see where they scored and what the similarities were. And that's why I was wondering, did they, were they contacted for asking for a proposal on cost?
No.
A 2 point spread, I think that would have been justifiable.
Yeah.
And to see who had what kind of an offer.
Yeah, I mean, the process allows, you don't have to sign a numerical-based rating system when you do it. So, you know, if the four of us felt like HR Green, even though they were 2 points behind, you know, merited some sort of discussion over EEI, we would have approached them first. So you can't necessarily approach two people at the same time and then ask them for quotes. It's you go to one and you negotiate, and then if you can't come to an agreement, either through scope, or through costs, and you go to the next one. So all four of us, I think three of us had, you know, EEI as the top choice, so that's who we approached, and the contract was like every other contract they do with us. So we felt that was reasonable to proceed.
That was a bit regular bid process, right? Did you select that?
No, it's an RFQ process.
Okay.
So it's a little bit backwards from a bid. So the RFQ, you select somebody based on qualifications and experience, and you don't take the price into account. You can't even really ask for the RFQ process. So you're supposed go in there and read all these proposals and say, this is the best company for the job, and then you approach that company directly, and if you come to terms on price, timing, and scope, then basically you should contract with them. So if this is a law that was approved, I don't know, a few decades ago.
Yeah, it's state law, yeah, correct.
That took out basically price-based competition on professional services. So, you know, people, I guess, felt that, you know, when you're thinking about doing architectural type stuff or engineering, that you should be doing it at a qualifications-based rather than cost-based.
Yeah, because if you went to the second person and you negotiated a lower price, then you would almost have to go back to the first person and say,
your price, you know what, against each other.
Yeah, that's what I didn't like about it. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions, comments on that? Would we like to put this on consent? Mm-hmm. As typical contracts do. All right. Bill of Rights 2016-51, well number 4, emergency repairs.
You're skipping Wrigley.
Did I skip one?
Wrigley. Yeah, Wrigley.
2016-50, Wrigley site expansion, intersection improvements.
All right. This particular item, we received some direction from IDOT several months ago, or probably even close to a year ago, to pass a MFT resolution, because that's how they thought the project had to be processed as far as handling of the money. They recently told us that we did not have to pass the resolution and we actually need to rescind it to clean up, you know, the MFT documentation. So confusing, yes, but that's the direction we've been given here recently. So there's a resolution that's in the packet that would rescind the resolution that was approved. I think in January it was approved.
Any questions or comments on that one? I'm glad IDOT, our state transportation group, knows what they're doing.
Well, I'm just always thought to a resolution doesn't pull the weight of an ordinance, so why do you got to take it and rescind it back?
Yeah, it's one of the paperwork rules for the state. So I mean, we have to approve by MFT resolutions. Yeah.
They want it clean and clear, so
yeah.
They don't
want to, for their audits.
Yeah. This is goofy.
So
goofy.
We will add that to consent.
Yep.
If no one objects. All right. Now we can get to 2016-51, rule number 4, emergency repairs.
Unfortunately, we have seen quite a drop in our production of well 4, which has always been historically a great producing well. And so we immediately thought maybe the motor was getting tired, so we had it tested. Test good. What we're thinking is that it's the actual bowls and the impellers, which you can see the picture of, and that pitting that's on the picture is actually what it just creates turbulence and it gets holes in there, and then the water actually doesn't get forced up through there as it should, which accounts for the loss in production. So since we had well 8 done this year already earlier, that Tom Healy, who is a representative of Lane Christensen, was able to put together a very accurate, he thinks, scope of work, and they could get right on it right now. Take the well out of service, take everything out, replace the bowls and the impellers, and put it back in the ground.
So this would be a sole source contract with Lane, and again, we had just bid out a project a few months ago that was the subject of a little bit of discussion. So we do recommend well 4, and then just a couple points of note in the memo, the one that's not is well 3 is a minor well, basically within this pressure zone. And did we include the hydrology? Okay.
Yes.
So didn't include the map.
No,
so
the map.
Within the water study, there's a nice map of how the town is bowl-shaped, basically. And so this is like the second from the north, and it's a little bit of a lower pressure zone than one of the higher ones. So well 3 being down and out of service isn't necessarily a huge deal because you have different pressure-reducing valves and booster pumps, and you have wells in other pressure zones that if well 4 were to go down because of this problem, that you would basically be able to transport water between pressure zones. So the reason I know this is because 2 weeks ago when Eric was on vacation, I got a call from Tom, our water guy, saying well 4 is down. So it ended up being a starter issue, and it was fixed in about 2 hours. It's electrical-based. Which we're in the process of replacing too.
Right.
But, you know, the PRV at the time was working fine. It was one of the hotter days, so the tower itself didn't really lose water, so that was good. So that was another reason why we said enough monkeying around with this, basically, because well 3 is down, you get well 4 done soon. The second point was the future discussion of well 3. So that'll be on next month's agenda, most likely, as to whether we want to rehab well 3, which is, again, a minor input into the system. Probably about the same cost, but it's, you know, buried in sand, so it works a little bit differently and harder, has a shorter lifespan, and whether we want to put forth that money and effort basically for another 4 or 5 years out of that well, or whether we just want to just scrap it and level the area. So something to think about for next month.
How are we handling this from a budget perspective?
Well, this year it'll basically cause your water fund to go further in the hole from a single year perspective. But we had budgeted for this in fiscal year 18 or 19.
19, I think that's what it
is. So all we're doing is moving it forward. So it doesn't have an effect on the five-year budget, which is really what we've been trying to do, is to make sure that we're stable over a five-year period. The fiscal year-end numbers, too, that I had sent out, which are unaudited, last week, we had about $140,000 in extra water sales than we had budgeted, which is like the first year that that's happened in a long time. So that's good news that the fund is relatively stable, or more stable than we had expected it to be, so it could, you know, incur an earlier expense than we had originally planned.
Doesn't sound like we got a whole lot of choices here. This has to get done.
Yeah. I mean, we can continue running it, but it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon it just won't run.
How long will it take? It doesn't take long to do this, as we just did with the other well.
That was almost a month. It was out of service.
It's a month out of service. Well 3 is offline.
Well 3, we can, I mean, if worst comes to worst, we can start it up. It just makes an awful, rattly noise.
So, pressure zones, everything, we'll be fine for that month.
I really feel good about this because we have two large producing wells and towers that can flow right back down into this section.
Okay. So it's a 1 month that we're needing to work to push that water.
And I think, Larry, you were here, Jackie, you were in a different position, but you were here when we had to pump water from well 4 all the way out to the North Tower every day in one of the hottest summers we ever had. Mm-hmm. So this well has been our workhorse. It's really a really good well, so I would really recommend getting it repaired.
No problems doing that. Like I said, it's an impact this year, but it's planned, so yeah, just moving it ahead.
We flipped some years, yep.
Any issues with consent on this one?
Nope.
No. Okay, continuing. 2016-52, Blackberry Woods Phase B, development status.
All right, a memo and a couple other documents in the packet are related. But Phase B is the portion of Blackberry Woods development that does not have the streets constructed over it. So there were underground utilities constructed, sanitary sewer, water main, a little bit of storm sewer. And back when an ordinance was passed back in 2010, which allowed kind of a separation between Phase A and Phase B, Phase B was allowed to just have letter of credit covering the water and sanitary sewer. So we've had some correspondence, or tried to have some correspondence with a developer over the last 6-8 months in regards to the letter of credit status. There was a little bit of communication, no formal communication as far as extending the letter of credit or what have you. So at this point, we're recommending issuing a letter of default to start the process, if you will. Developer has 60 days to comply, or otherwise we move ahead with acquiring of the letter of credit. So similar to what you saw last month with Fountain Village as well.
Is this one Crestview, or is this holds this one?
It's not Crestview. It is Aladdin's company.
Meadowbrook.
Yes.
Okay, so they've completely taken all of it.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's what I thought. Okay. I have no issue with staff pursuing preparing the letter of default if nobody else. Mm-hmm. I think it's prudent for us to continue on this path as we've done with others. So this is staff direction. And this will come.
It will
to
be
council?
A city council vote or a declaration.
Declaration of default. Okay. But you'll draft that to bring to council. Okay. So we're moving that to 7/26. Or actually, do we? We're not taking action here, so we're just. This is staff direction, correct?
It does require a city council vote to declare in default for 60 days. So. We can put it on this 7/26 agenda unless we can't get the materials from Kathy, in which case it'd be August.
Okay. And that goes consent. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have no old business. New business. Or additional, I should say.
I just was down on, I usually go this way, Countryside Parkway and 34, the island. It's like really weedy looking.
The island with the sign, or one of the interior islands?
You're talking Countryside Parkway, the five or four lane concrete.
Yeah. Is that not ours?
47. That's ours. All of it.
And it has daylilies and stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
So
the daylilies at the south end are actually, we're going to dig those out. Those are actually going to be part of the contract that will get ripped out with about 34 widening.
Oh, okay. Is that kind of why it's just looking
that
way?
Yes, and
okay.
That and lack of staff.
Well, and the day why I was going to go with this is if I was ripped out, that made me want to lose the daylilies and just put grass.
We are.
It's all weeds in the daylilies.
We're going to take out all the daylilies. That's our, because that's where it will be the westbound lanes.
And they are going to be used someplace else.
They will. They will be all over town. There's a lot of daylilies there.
We've done that in a couple other places where we remove the daylilies.
They catch all the weeds that I used to look
for. And we actually got some specialty spray. So we sprayed them also to try to kill the weeds and not the daylilies.
Okay. I was just curious. That was going to be my suggestion. Can we get a bunch of kids to go out there and dig them out and put grass in?
They'll just be there for now.
I just want to mention, are we going to get the curbs painted at Wendette there on the entrance? We talked about that a couple months ago.
We talked about looking at it. I don't know if that's the smartest thing to do, to be real honest, because it's so far back. We looked at it, Brad and I looked at it, and if I do it there, Ken, I'm going to have to do it in every subdivision with a median like that. And I don't know if that's something that we want to take.
Well, then, can we get better lighting there then? Because that's the problem. It's not very well lit, so people are hitting the curbs and stuff.
Well, you can't get better lighting there. The light's as close as IDOT will let it. Not IDOT, ComEd. There's overhead power.
Right.
So we can't get it any closer.
What's the other alternative?
It is, but, I mean, we have them. I can think of one in McHugh. We have one at Sycamore. We have one at Deal Farm. None of those are painted either. So it would be my recommendation not to, because you would reincur that maintenance constantly, especially with any kind of reflective paint.
Okay. And I don't know, did we ever find out any more about the commercial lot that isn't being mowed out there?
Oh, it's in various stages of property maintenance violations.
So, we don't even know who, right?
No, I think we know the property owner. I don't know who it is off the top of my
head. I thought we said that we weren't sure because it changed hands or something.
You're talking at the Wendette, the
commercial lot that hasn't been mowed all year. Because I'm just wondering, we have that new way of handling that we can mow it and bill them, right?
After you write them a ticket, after you go through the appeal hearing, get an order to do it, yes.
Okay.
Just to follow up on what Jackie was saying, do we go around and check for these medians to make sure that whatever we planted isn't affecting visibility? Because the one that I've noticed lately is when I go to Home Depot on the north entrance there towards the ball fields, when you go to turn it in, we've got some, I guess it's some kind of natural grass growing there. It's really hard to see oncoming traffic.
And in the median or in the berm or
Blackberry Shore Lane from
in the median?
Yes. Yeah. I know I drive that one frequently and I do take complaints on that. not up at, I don't really take complaints on that one at the intersections coming into Home Depot, but back at the ball field. And that's where I take most complaints because people can't see them coming in, and that's when they have enough speed
honestly,
to where you can't see
them. Honestly, that whole shopping center has that.
They're all
and they're
natural
terrible.
And tall.
Yeah, they're
we
tall.
Did, we did contact them regarding the stop sign visibility within the shopping center.
Yeah,
because those are all mm-hmm. overgrown. I did not mm-hmm. know about Blackberry Short Lane. We'll mm-hmm. take a look at that one
yeah,
on a public street.
Kind of a too tall of a grass they put in.
Yeah, the one I noticed was the one where you're actually turning in to Home Depot, like by the
at
garden
the,
center mm-hmm. there?
Yeah, at that main entrance.
Yeah, that is pretty high there.
There are some standard geometric measurements that we can go out and do, and if there's not a site triangle. Then
and we've had to move some on Countryside Parkway before to correct those issues. So we can do that. I got that one.
And the second and last thing I have, last meeting we talked about the downtown and some safety issues. One of them was, it seems like, obviously, speeding is a problem. I had a discussion with the chief about this, and they do what they can to put cars out there, but obviously, you know, you can't just devote a car there all the time. My question is, do we still have those speed indicator signs? Didn't we have some permanent ones?
The trailers?
Yeah. No, I'm not talking
we
the trailers.
We had ones that were mounted down there, solar ones.
You know what I'm talking about?
We have them.
Can we get those up? I mean,
maybe after the new lights come in.
Okay. I mean, I think
so you have to put them
they're pole mounted. Yeah. So they were mounted yeah. on our mm-hmm. on the ornamental poles.
Right. I personally would like to see one, just for example, going northbound. Maybe one before you get to the downtown.
Yeah,
maybe
not in the downtown
or something.
But before,
and then maybe one, you know, the opposite direction. It's too late to post them downtown because they're already speeding through there, but we can, I think they're somewhat effective.
I'll talk to Rich about it.
I have noticed walking, there's a more of a police presence, like in the morning, with speeders. They're like sitting over by, what would be over there? There's like by the putt-putt place.
Perfection.
There in that area, I've seen officers. Somebody was just sitting in the median for a while there.
Yeah.
One with the SUV. So it is. I mean, they are still speeding, and I notice in the morning when I walk, but there's been more officers there.
You mentioned yesterday that tickets were up on 47, like in the immediate Old Town, downtown area. So I had asked him if he could have somebody run a report basically to show everybody that he is, you know, targeting that area.
No, I've noticed it, so. Just walking, I see them in the morning. They're more, and that's in the morning. They're whizzing into town, so that's why I agree with you. I think farther out of town,
mm-hmm. and still advocate for us
if you have them,
and see if we can get the removable. They're basically an 18x18 small. Actually, I think that's bigger than they are. They're signs that are relocatable. You can just take them off the post, mm-hmm. put them anywhere you want. Oswego uses them. I've talked to their officers. They say they're very effective because you can catch people basically on surprise because you're moving them regularly. Back when I was on public safety, we had talked about that. We had no movement on that, but I think those would be effective, especially in the downtown area.
Yeah.
And it allows us to canvas other areas that become problems. So, something to think about.
You know, I was up in the Hoffman States just recently, and I was surprised how much those photo cameras at the intersections make everybody behave. It's amazing because it's like, I mean, they have almost every intersection. So, I mean, that gets people's attention. Especially you see the sign says, you know, photo tickets.
So what would it take to get these installed?
We would have to find out a mounting bracket when we get those new poles because they're going to be a much different diameter than our other those fluted ornamentals.
Could you put one down with the brackets you have? Is there any lighting? I don't know where the lighting starts and ends.
It's all the old ones, all the old ornamentals, those little shorter ones.
Oh, okay.
That's what they were on.
But is there anything that exists now, say,
not that's going to be close enough to the road.
That's what I was trying to think. There's really nothing
there.
Because
it really has to be pretty close to the road.
We'll take a look at a couple of different
absolutely.
Bring it back.
And For the bulb down there at Wendette, I'll have our electrician look at to see if we can put a different ballast in there that can get a higher wattage bulb.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll...
It's just dark at those intersections.
Maybe that'll illuminate it a little better so they can see that curve. I'll see if they can get either a 250 or a 400 watt that'll light up that a little better. So we can try to get some brighter light without moving the pole, which we really can't.
One really quick, just a note, nothing, but we were talking about roundabouts, turnabouts,
yes.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Have anybody driven up to Huntley? They're putting one on 47.
Correct. Yes.
It is so bizarre. On Route 47.
Burlington Road.
Thank you, I was trying to remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we were just up there, I'm like, what in heaven's name? Yeah, that's a kind of an interesting spot to put one, I thought.
In northern suburbs, it's Crystal Lake in that area. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is on 47. Mm-hmm. It just seemed, yeah.
Just wait till you see them on the interstate.
It just struck me as being...
Maybe coming.
I'm just like picturing trucks.
59 works.
Yeah. The diamond is extremely effective.
Yeah, I wonder what their thinking was on that. So I just wanted to share if anybody's going up toward Huntley.
Because they move traffic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They move traffic.
Yeah, it's better than a stop sign.
And it's a lot cheaper than putting in the lights and the control.
Well, that's true. Stop. Yeah. Oh, it just struck me as an odd place on there.
Yeah, if you look at... If you go online and do a roundabout safety diagram, you'll see a comparison between a four-way stop and a roundabout, and you can see the points of conflict significantly reduced.
Yeah. So I was just surprised I haven't been up that way that it was on 47.
We should have done that a long time ago at 126 and 71, where they moved the road. And
Yeah. So I just wanted to share. If anybody's up there, go check it out.
What's
that? Just a quick update on some IDOT planning. We've received two sets of pre-final plans, one for Route 34, the Western improvement, from Center out to Eldemain, like a 600-page plan set, and also Route 71, the intersection of 71 and 47, and also heading out to 126. They're breaking those two projects out. So we're reviewing both sets of plans, and comments I know are due on Route 34 by the end of this week, and then 71... in mid-August, comments are due, but no surprises. Pretty much the plans are, what was presented previously and some other preliminary documents. But we're just taking a look at some of the finer details.
Thank you. Anything else? We will adjourn at 6:38.
Thank you.